translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Suta Goswami said, the most powerful sage, Maitreya, was a friend of Vyasadeva. Being encouraged and pleased by Vidura's inquiry about transcendental knowledge, Maitreya spoke as follows. Purport. Questions and answers are very satisfactorily dealt with when the inquirer is bona fide and the speaker is also authorized. Here Maitreya is considered a powerful sage, and therefore he is described as Bhagavan. This word can be used not only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but for anyone who is almost as powerful as the Supreme Lord. Maitreya is addressed as Bhagavan because he was spiritually far advanced. He was a personal friend of Dwaipayana Vyasadeva, a literary incarnation of the Lord. Maitreya was very pleased with the inquiries of Vidura because they were the inquiries of a bona fide advanced devotee. Thus Maitreya was encouraged to answer. When there are discourses on transcendental topics between devotees of equal mentality, the questions and answers are very fruitful and encouraging. So again, Rupa Goswami describes the process of Vaidhi Bhakti, of practicing devotional service according to the rules of Shastra, as interpreted by one's own guru and Shastra, and sadhu, guru, Shastra, sadhu's vakya, chitete koriya aikyo. The proper thing for a sadhaka in devotional service to do is to follow the guidance of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Actually, Shastra first, and then Guru and Sadhu say. So, Rupa Goswami, in enumerating 64 angas or practices of regulated devotional service, he then takes the last five and singles them out as the most important, the most potent. We mentioned yesterday one of them. Srimad Bhagavata Artanam Aswado Rosikaiksaha. Relishing the messages of the Bhagavatam in the association, in the company of devotees who have a real taste for the nectar of the Bhagavatam. That's one of the five. Another of the five is, if I can remember it, Snigde Svato Vare Samana Ashaye Snigde. You should, I can't remember exactly all the words, but one should look for the association of more advanced devotees. But there is further stipulation. You should especially look for the devotees who have a similar style of devotional service than you have, that you have a similar style to what you have. As Prabhupada says here, when there are transcendental topics between devotees of equal mentality, the questions and answers are very fruitful and encouraging. Do you remember the exact phrase? Anyway, one should look for a devotee who has a similar mentality. Sajatiya. Yeah. Ashaya. Ashaye. Snigde. Svatovare. The devotee should be more advanced than you. He should be, he should have a similar style of devotional service, because there's different ways to approach Krishna's service. You can put emphasis on preaching. You can put emphasis on meditating. Prabhupada put emphasis on preaching in his own devotional practice. At least we don't know we don't want to offend by speculating what was going on inside Prabhupada's head, how he was meditating on Krishna, in what mood. That is not for the disciples to speculate on. But what we saw of Prabhupada was his external behavior, always busy in the preaching activities. He put his emphasis on that. And he did not over-encourage his disciples to prematurely sit down and try to remember Krishna's intimate leelas. That, he said, work now, samadhi later. That was Prabhupada's attitude. So emphasis on preaching. Another Vaishnav, another authentic Vaishnav, authorized Vaishnav, empowered Vaishnav may have a different emphasis, personal emphasis. And if you become the disciple of that Vaishnav, you may be encouraged to approach devotional service in a different way than Prabhupada would. So, if you really feel that you don't want to preach, you want to just sit down and meditate, then go to such a devotee who also does that, who also approaches Krishna consciousness in that style. Sajatiya, Ashaye, a devotee who has a similar mentality, similar way of approaching Krishna that you would like to learn, that you're inclined toward. Svatovare, he should be better than you. You will benefit the most by associating with someone more advanced than yourself. Of course, to do that is risky and it's difficult. If you commit aparads, if you just make yourself a nuisance, then you won't benefit so much. In fact, you may get negative results. Yeah. And if you associate with just equal devotees, you may just waste your time gossiping or even, you know, engaging each other in fault-finding of other devotees. And especially if you associate with less mature devotees, you're more inclined to just do the wrong things and maybe get dragged down to their level. So therefore, we should try to look for the opportunity to serve more advanced devotees, but we have to do it without committing offenses. We have to have a service attitude when we approach more advanced devotees, you know, not just for wasting time and socializing. But that is what's recommended. And the third stipulation is snigdha. Now that means literally oily from snig, mm-hmm. But the conventional meaning of it is affectionate, sympathetic, let's say. You want to become someone's disciple, but maybe he doesn't want any disciples. Maybe he's afraid to take disciples, or he's just not inclined. He doesn't want the distraction. He doesn't, you know, let someone else do that. I have other service to do. So the person has to be willing to give his association, especially if you're asking for diksha or for serious instruction. The devotee may not want to give it. Yeah. For various reasons, and there may be good reasons. So he has to be sympathetic in the sense of being willing to reciprocate the way you want to reciprocate. Those qualifications are met, then you should go for the association. Especially if what you're looking for is someone to submit serious questions to, hoping to get good answers. We worship the Guru, Ayin Gurudeva Namaha. The Guru is worshipped with the Jnana Beej mantra. Because that's what the Guru is for mainly, is giving us transcendental realization. Chakku dano dilo ye. One who's given me my eyes, the gift of eyes. You know, like, you know, you get an eye transplant from the eye bank. Someone has gifted you an eye. So we are gifted our spiritual eyes by our Guru. That's Narottam Das Thakur's prayer. Chakku dano dilo ye. The one who gave me my eyes as a gratuitous gift. Janme janme prabhushe. I acknowledge that he will be my master for this whole life and life after life. It's such a great gift to be given these spiritual eyes that I have to surrender myself as a servant of that person life after life. In just out of gratitude. Even if there's no legal rule that you have to do it. You haven't signed a contract of indentured servitorship You know, you're not legally obliged, but you're morally obliged. Out of decency, out of gratitude, one should be ready to be the servant of the spiritual master, life after life. So, Prabhupada's first sentence in the purport, questions and answers are very satisfactorily dealt with when the inquirer is bona fide and the speaker is also authorized. Two words here, bona fide and authorized. Actually, both should be both. Prabhupada often talks about bona fide spiritual master. It's one of Prabhupada's favorite phrases. Prabhupada has some favorite phrases, the clutches of Maya, you know, Maya's snares, you know, very poetic graphic images, and Prabhupada liked to use them over and over again. Bona fide spiritual master was another phrase, and here he's talking about the disciple should be bona fide. So bona fide, yeah, okay, bona fide means authentic. You know, we take it to mean, you know, a real certified, or, you know, a real guru. But others like to use the term Satguru, you know, a real guru, transcendental guru, perfect guru. The Vaishnava Acharyas, although sometimes, of course, the Shastra often uses the term Satguru, but the Vaishnava Acharyas, it's not their favorite phrase. They like to talk about a faithful guru. That is what bona fide means. And, you know, it comes from legal jargon, bona fide. It's Latin. In good faith. You may break a contract unintentionally, but you're not as culpable as you would be if you intentionally broke the contract, you know, deceptively. If you entered the contract in all good faith and intended to fulfill it, then you're partially excused according to the law. Even if you don't fulfill the terms of the contract, you tried. You entered the contract in good faith, you just couldn't fulfill it. That is called bona fide, in good faith. That's what the term means. So a bona fide, I don't know if the proper English pronunciation is bona fide, I don't know. It's ISKCON pronunciation. A bona fide guru is one who is acting in good faith. That's his primary qualification. Not that he's God, or he's empowered with the mystic powers of God, that he can walk through walls and understand your thoughts by mental telepathy. No. His prime qualification is not some mystic power or being one and the same with God. The qualification of a real guru, according to our understanding, is that he's bona fide. Everything he does in good faith. He has perfect faith in his guru and the predecessors of his guru, the Vaishnava Sampradaya. And he's representing them faithfully, saying what they would say, doing what they would do. That is bona fide. Just like the representative of a corporation. He's acting only in the interests of the corporation and not betraying those interests. He's bona fide. He's acting in good faith. So, the transcendental corporation of the Vaishnava Sampradaya is properly represented by the bona fide guru. And that is his qualification. Not some mystic power, some potency of his own, but simply that he's completely faithful to his predecessor acharyas. Then Prabhupada uses the word authorized. That means recognized, empowered. When a disciple is bona fide, is faithful, and trustworthy, then the guru is very glad to empower him to carry out his mission, to preach on his behalf, to speak on his behalf, even to give initiation on his behalf. That's the empowerment that a faithful disciple receives from his guru, to also become guru. So those devotees in ISKCON who are acting as gurus, it's not their qualification, again, is not any power of their own. But the fact that they have been faithful to Prabhupada and Prabhupada has empowered them to do this service. But here we're, in the purport, Prabhupada is talking about the process of questions and answers. The disciple, the student, asks important questions. This is part of the process. It's not irrelevant. The communication is not telepathic. It's by standard procedure of expressing questions, saying them out loud in regular language, whether the language is Sanskrit, Bengali, or English. No, but you speak the questions. You don't just expect the guru to know everything. He may know everything, but it's not the normal procedure. The normal procedure is you submit your questions. And they should be relevant questions. Questions about your real problems of life, not just idle curiosity. Or questions to show off yourself. You shouldn't show off your capacity in front of the guru. You should not do that. You should actually submit your fault. That's like you go to a doctor and you don't want to reveal your problem. You don't want to discuss the, you know, your medical problem. What can he do for you? Then you're wasting his time. You know, you don't want to, you know, admit that you're sick. You want to pretend you're not. Then the doctor cannot cure you. He cannot even identify your illness, and he, you know, without your information that you can provide for him. Like that, spiritual communication begins with asking real questions about the real problems of your life, your real dilemmas. Why can't I remember Krishna? Why am I not interested in serving the Vaishnavas and the Supreme Lord? Why am I still very interested in material enjoyment? These are the questions to ask. However you want to phrase them, those are the questions. Or is it Sanatan Goswami? I can't remember the verb. Tapa Traya. Who am I, actually? People say I'm a big pundit, but I don't really know who I am and what's the purpose of my life. So who am I, and why am I suffering these threefold miseries of material existence? That's important questions to ask. Questions are submitted, then answers are spoken. And it works. The process works when the person inquiring is bona fide, has confidence in the authority of the speaker, and the speaker is actually empowered to give the right answers. That's the standard procedure. Then Prabhupada talks about Maitreya being called Bhagavan. Maitreya Bhagavan. We don't recognize more than one God. So using Bhagavan to refer to someone other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead only indicates that that person also possesses great opulences. One who possesses opulences to a great, great extent, it can be called Bhagavan. Although primarily, originally, the word only refers to God. Because the proper meaning of Bhagavan is one who possesses such opulences as explained by Parashara Rishi in the Vishnu Purana. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriyaha jnana vairagyos chaiva shannam bhaga itingina. This is what we call bhaga, or assets, opulences, great assets. Assets doesn't only mean money, although that may be included. Aishwarya actually means the power to control others. You can control others by various means. A Brahmin can influence other people without exerting any force or even having any political strength. A Brahmin, his influence is simply in the reliability of his word. He can influence human society very much, more than a Kshatriya, just by his honest and trustworthy words. And then a Kshatriya has his force. He has an army. He can punish people. He can take away people's lives. By that force, his authority is respected. A Vaishya has money. The power of his money is respected. There are various ways to influence, but this is all called Aishwarya. Capacity to influence and control other people. It's an opulence. Maybe you're not interested in that opulence. Many people are. And they look for different ways to get control over other people. Actually, a Vaishnava should not be too much interested in that. It can be very dangerous on the path, especially for a neophyte. We have to learn, first of all, to be servants. We want to be dominators. Maybe not in the obvious ways, but we may want in a subtle way. Just like women try to dominate men in subtle ways. You know, it's feminine nature. They want to control a husband. And that's the way, that's life. That's the way things are. And they have their subtle ways of doing it. Feminine ways of controlling it. There's many different ways of being a controller. But the basic program of becoming, of reviving our Krishna consciousness means to stop being a controller in this world. There's dovetailing. We can use our ability to control in Krishna's service. But basically, we have to stop being the controller. We can use everything in Krishna's service. We can use material things, but it doesn't mean we should remain material or become more materially entangled in the name of dovetailing. So as much as we can, we should stop being the dominator and start being the servant. They're contrary attitudes. If you can do your domination in the spirit of service, that's the best thing, but that's not easy. That, when you're mature, you learn how to do that. Someone like Yudhishthira could dominate practically the whole world and still think himself just a servant. But an immature devotee should not have too much power and shouldn't be looking for too much power in the beginning. First practice, first learn how to be a servant, and then you can use your capacities of domination in Krishna's service. Just like a soldier, when you're inducted into the army, you go to boot camp, even if you're going to become a general. Maybe you're the son of a general and you have all signs of that you can become a good general yourself. Still, they send you to the boot camp to learn how to be a soldier for a few months or weeks. And you start off as a private soldier, and you graduate. Then after some time, they send you to officer school. So there's a gradual elevation from the bottom up. They recognize in the army, you have to learn to be a soldier, and then you can be a leader. Anyway, Aishwarya is there. It's an opulence. It's a natural, attractive opulence. You can't help but be impressed by someone who has power, because if you don't submit to that power, you're in trouble. You have to take power you have to take someone who has influential power seriously. You cannot avoid it. You may not love it, but you're attracted, and you have to take it seriously. But the personality of Godhead is the original possessor of all Aishwarya. In the Aishwarya and the other opulences, Aishwarya sa samagrasya, viryasya, physical strength or prowess. Because vira means a hero, it also means male. Even in Latin, the word is vir, I think, means male or man. In Sanskrit, it doesn't mean male, it means hero. But when the word was borrowed into Latin, it took on the idea of male and virility in English. Same word, virya. But heroism, prowess, physical strength, this is virya. Narayana, God, he's the original possessor of infinite, all. Whatever power anybody has, whatever viryam anybody has, is derived from the viryam of the personality of Godhead. And similarly, yasha, fame, shriya, beauty, these are all attractive opulences. Jnana, knowledge, a person who has knowledge is taken seriously. And he's attractive. Other people would like to have such knowledge. Or even if they don't, they want to hear from the person who has knowledge and get guidance from such a person. That person is influential. And also, last, renunciation. At least in a progressive human society, renunciation is respected and taken seriously. Some cultures don't respect don't recognize the value of renunciation and doing without opulence and foregoing control of other people. A sannyasi or a sadhu who doesn't try to control anything, who doesn't care to own anything, he's respected in the Vedic culture and in some other cultures. And some other cultures, it's not recognized or respected. But it's natural for renunciation also to be an attractive opulence, something to be taken seriously. So the original meaning of Bhagawan is the person who possesses all of these. It's not just that there are only six opulences, but for the sake of, you know, the opulences, the assets of God are infinite. There are infinite kinds of opulences that God possesses. But for the sake of understanding in some systematic way, six categories, six basic kinds of opulences are identified by Parashara Rishi. Someone who possesses all six kinds of opulences in full, infinitely, without limitation, that is actually Bhagavan. The real meaning of Bhagavan is the personality of Godhead. Nobody else. It is only upacharitaha. We say metaphorically or by extension, lion among men. Okay, Arjuna is a lion among men. Purusha Vyagra, Krishna calls him that.
He becomes anyone when you say
that. He's not a lion. Yeah, he's not a lion. He doesn't, you know, even if he's a kshatriya, he eats meat sometimes, but he doesn't jump on a live animal and bite it. You never see the Pandavas doing that. So not that kind of lion. He's not in a lion body. But he's a metaphorical lion. He shares the quality, the prowess, and the courage, and the ferociousness of a lion. By similarity, he's like a lion. But we not only say he's like a lion, we say he is a lion. That's, you know, going beyond simile to metaphor. And you go beyond that in poetry, it's what's called atishaya. Actually, there's another step called utreksha. Is that the moon over there? It's actually, you know, your beloved's face. But you don't say that. You say, is that the moon? I think maybe that's the moon. So you're conjecturing. You're almost certain that's not a face, that's the moon. That's called utreksha. And then when you even go beyond that and you say, that's the moon, period. You know, you don't even mention a face. That's called atishaya, hyperbole. Or, you know, something similar to what's called hyperbole in Western poetics. But metaphor, you still call it a face, but that face is a moon, the moon-like face. Now, the moon-like face is a simile, but the moon face is a metaphor. The man who is a lion, not just like a lion, but he is a lion, that's a metaphor. Upama. But he isn't actually a lion. Similarly, Bhagavan is God. Someone like Maitreya can be called Bhagavan, but he's not actually God. He's godly. He's similar to God. You can say he's almost God. Some people are specially empowered as demigods, half God, semi-demigod, one quarter God, like that. And great sages are better than demigods, so they're, you know, two-thirds God or whatever. Almost God, but not quite. Metaphorically God. You can say, poetically, Bhagavan, but that's poetic or metaphorical usage. Properly or literally, Bhagavan only means the personality of Godhead. Metaphorically, it can refer to a very exceptional great person. Rare, great soul. Like sages like Maitreya. Okay, so I'll stop. Are there any questions or comments?
Bona fide means in principle, in reality.
It means in good faith.
In good faith.
Fide means faith. Yes. So when you act in good faith, then you're bona fide.
Bona fide intention.
Yeah, it's your attitude and your behavior. You actually mean to do the right thing. You mean to fulfill your promises. And you do something. You don't just only think about it, but you actually try, make all attempts, then you're bona fide.
In proper perspective.
Okay. But based on good faith. Yes.
Yes, you're mentioning it. It's not appropriate for a disciple to speculate upon the ontological identity of the spiritual master.
Or, yeah, and what's going on inside his heart. It's apparat even.
At the same time, we're advised that one should view the spiritual master in terms of his intimate relationship with whom the Sri Krishna is. So how do we adjust that?
Well, we pray Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya, the dearmost of Krishna, and that he's called Prabhupada, he's direct representative of Krishna. But we don't speculate about we better not speculate whether he's a gopi or a cowherd boy. We haven't been privileged to be given that information. Prabhupada didn't tell us. He may have dropped a few hints once in a while, but he didn't want us to know. He didn't want us to know his intimate relationship with Krishna, his actual sarupa. So therefore, for us to start trying to find out would be offensive. When the guru reveals what's going on inside his mind and heart, then we can accept it, and we can take it. But when he doesn't choose to reveal it, then we should not delve. That would be aparad. That's his private business. Now, everything he does public, he has no public. Guru has no private life on the outside, but at least he can keep his private life on the inside. Yeah, that he's allowed. You know, to keep his meditation private. But everything he does on the outside is public. He has no privacy. That's acharya. Right?
So you do
acharya
also
behaves and how he speaks, especially. That's why asking questions and getting answers is the most important thing, especially to choose a guru. It's by service, but especially by hearing. By asking questions and hearing the answers, that's how you establish a spiritual relationship.
Company of vital Vaishnav.
Yes.
Company of vital Vaishnav.
Yes.
When you attain his qualities,
yes,
then you shall search for much better Vaishnav.
You mean if you become as good as your guru, you should drop him and get another one?
I'm putting a question.
Yes, yes.
Two Vaishnavs, you are emphasizing that we should have a company of a good Vaishnav.
Better than you.
Who can give you, yes, better than you. But if you become better...
better than him?
Then you search for much better than.
You mean, okay, if I become... Well, that's what you said. So if I become as good as my guru, then I have to find a better one, is what you're saying?
Yes. A disciple becomes a guru across the guru. He goes across the guru. A good Vaishnav can cross the guru. So what Prabhupada has done, his guru could not do it. Though he instructed it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told that some Shakti is coming to...
It's not really like that. It's not that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati couldn't do what Prabhupada did. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is doing it. What Prabhupada is doing is simply as a representative of Bhaktisiddhanta. And whatever power he has, that's at least what he tells us, is just what my guru has given me. So it is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati doing it. It's not that Prabhupada is independent of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in any capacity. He never thinks of himself like that.
It is the full line is.
Yes. Disciple is simply acting as the agent of his guru. There's no question of him surpassing the guru. He's never independent. The guru may empower the disciple to do something that he hasn't done. It doesn't mean he can't, couldn't have done it. He just chose not to do it. We can't say that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati couldn't do what Prabhupada did. He just never did. He never left India. But if he had, he would have, you know, done great things. He just never chose to do it. You think Chaitanya Mahaprabhu couldn't come to the West and personally deliver us? He went to Jarikanda Forest. He went down south. he couldn't have gone to New York, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There wasn't any New York then, but you know, but if you know, if he had appeared, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared in the 20th century, he could have gone to New York. He chose not to. He chose to let some person, you know, 10 generations later, do it for him. But it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who's doing it. It's not the Prabhupada that's greater than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's simply agent, servant.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew who is the appropriate person,
yes,
Shakti, to do this job.
Yes.
They put, God knows the whole personalities.
Yes.
What type of it? What particular person will get particular job?
Yes. Yes.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew that Prabhupada only can do this job.
Yes.
And he has nominated him to go ahead and do it.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made all the arrangements for Prabhupada to become prepared to do it.
It was all his blessing,
yes,
that he prospered like this.
Yes, that's the process of Krishna consciousness. But as far as becoming equal, becoming as good as your guru, that may happen. I mean, but normally, even if the guru is not 100% Krishna conscious, he's further on the path than you. If I begin Dandavat Parikrama, and someone is halfway finished, I'm unlikely to catch up with that other person. He's 6 kilometers ahead of me, you know, unless I'm very exceptional and I you know, kill myself by doing Dana Purukuma 12 hours a day. I'm not going to catch up with him. He's 6 kilometers ahead of me. He'll reach the end before I do.
He can do Dandati,
yes,
and suffer permanently in the rest of life. If it is not done properly, suffer permanently. Some portion is better, breathing is better, some lungs is better, some leg and other portion. So everything should be done in appropriate way.
Yeah, do 1 hour a day. 1 hour a day, if you get tired, stop.
One of the nuances is there that you should not do parikrama if it becomes excessively difficult for you.
Yeah, if you're sick, yes, or exhausted, yeah. You stop and do some other, to continue some other time. Yeah, it's not meant to be an ordeal. But I was making, giving an example to show that normally your guru is more advanced than you, even if he's not 100% advanced. So he's usually going to be a few steps ahead of you at least. No matter how, you know, person's ahead of you, you're not too likely to catch up with him.
You know, the guru, by just giving mercy to the disciples, he's progressing too. Nobody's spiritual life is difficult. It's been a month. Why do you have to move?
Yes. If you don't move, it's like a rocket ship. A rocket ship has to accelerate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the rocket ship runs out of fuel and just sits there and not accelerating, it's going to fall down. Mm-hmm. You can't not accelerate when you're trying to escape the atmosphere. You have to exert more force and keep on accelerating. Otherwise, you fall back down. So in Krishna consciousness, you have to continue advancing constantly. It's maybe slowly, but you can't be sitting still, you know, or you'll be dragged down
there
by gravity.
There is a typical story that Lord controlled the calm, and he started bragging to Shiva and everybody.
Yes.
Then he went to Narayan.
Yes.
Narayan was feeling amused, that he is feeling arrogant and proud of it,
yes,
that he has controlled the calm.
Narad
yes, once the Gaudi come, and he started bragging to all demigods and all that. Then Bholanath told him that don't tell all these things, narrate to the Lord Krishna, don't narrate all these things, these are many things. But he also tried to brag Gaudi Narayan. He made him another Maya, put him in the Maya. And then he came to realize that, oh, I have just bragged for this all.
Yes.
But I will be disciple, it is the blessing of the guru.
Yes. And there are cases like Shyamananda Prabhu was the disciple of Hridaya Chaitanya, who was in the Sakya Rasa. Shyamananda became seriously attracted to the Madhurya Rasa. So Hridaya Chaitanya, he wasn't upset that his disciple was getting more advanced than himself. He said, you go, get instruction from Jiva Goswami. He'll instruct you in Madhurya Rasa. He didn't break the relationship with his Diksha Guru. He maintained his faith in his Guru and all respect, but he was sent by his Guru to get further instruction from Jiva Goswami. That's all.
So that Jiva is the Shiksha Guru.
So the Shiksha Guru You approach a Diksha Guru with the blessings of your Diksha Guru. Mm. You don't reject the Diksha Guru without good cause.
In the principle of Amanina Manadena also, even Sri Prahlad Maharaj, his Guru's Charna and Amarka were demons, but he still gave them all respect.
Yes, and his father. He showed his father all respect. Thank you. Okay.
Breakfast time? You will continue to understand it. We are now in the channel, English channel. We will set for this teaching.
No, no, we couldn't have done it, but we couldn't find anything.